Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
D-Aliens, a happy Trash Tuesday to you. This is Mirazzi, executive producer of the DA Show. Thanks again for keeping it locked to the best of the DA Show. Here's all of Tuesday's laughs, hysteria, and hot takes. The best of the DA Show right now.
Blake Snell's infamous comments now about not wanting to come back and play baseball, that it wasn't safe. That happened as he was playing video games via Twitch. And now we have had another incident where Ezekiel Elliott may have forgotten. Well, forget the may have. He did forget he was being recorded and that his feed was still on. And he admitted to being high. He said that he was low-key faded and then realized, oh, crap. I didn't sign off yet. So, SportsIllustratedSI.com's Jimmy Traina writes about this, and the headline is, Ezekiel Elliott forgets to log off, admits to being high on Twitch. And this made Ezekiel Elliott very upset. Zeke tweeted, actually, I was referring to the few drinks I had, which I said during the live stream. Doesn't that make this defamation? You guys will be hearing from my lawyers. Now, I would argue that SI is definitely not at risk for defamation here, because when Zeke says he's, quote, low-key faded, I guess it could mean drinks, but in most parlance, in most corners, that means you've smoked some weed, which is fine. I don't think anybody's going to judge that. In 2020, that whole stigma seemed to fade away for most people. But what's hysterical is Zeke getting mad that his Twitch was still on, because Zeke said, quote, bro, I'm low-key faded. Oh, snap. Didn't even end my stream yet. As he looked at his phone. So Zeke's now hot and bothered because SI published this, but ultimately this was his mistake. And is this big a deal? Of course not. But what is seemingly a big deal is that Zeke always plays the fool. It never seems to end. He always has a news story or a news cycle that surrounds something silly that he did. Sometimes it's more than silly. It's worse than silly. The question becomes, at 24 years old, will Zeke ever stop playing the fool? It is where we begin your cold open.
Officially from the three, they run a read option handoff. Elliott broke through and walked the dog. That is Ezekiel Elliott at his best. Touchdown.
Oh, bro, I'm low-key faded, bro.
Are you?
Oh, no, I didn't even end my stream yet.
Amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was Brad Sham on Cowboys Radio, and that was Zeke.
Bro, I am low-key faded. Oh, no, I didn't turn off my phone.
Now, let's just go back to April, where, remember, he and Dak Prescott had the house party when there was a statewide quarantine. Oops, that was early in the coronavirus. They were not supposed to be gathering with 10 or more people, and seemingly they definitely had 10 or more people. That's Zeke in the middle of things. Then he tests positive for the coronavirus in June and was, quote, livid after his positive test was reported by the media, as he cited HIPAA laws, which is funny because we've learned about all these other professional athletes that have been public about testing positive as well. He is being sued for more than $200,000 by a woman who claimed his dogs attacked her while she was cleaning the pool. Zeke, of course, also has had the multiple run-ins and brushes with the law. He was at that music concert where he pushed over security guard, got into trouble for that. Zeke has constantly been in the limelight for the wrong reasons during off seasons. Every off season, we joke about this on the show. Set your watch to it. Every off season, Zeke is in the middle of some other bad story. And I just think Ezekiel Elliott is never going to quite grow up. I mean, how long do you have to be in the league before this type of stuff just stops happening to you? And the fact is, these aren't awful things. These aren't terrible, awful things in this sphere. But Zeke has been connected to domestic violence as well. And Zeke has just kind of never, quote, grown up. And I don't think we're going to get there. I really don't. I think we're at this point in time now where you've been in the league for four seasons. You're now in your mid-20s and you're still acting like a kid. And I just think that's what he's always going to be. And look, let's face it. Last year, he held out looking for a new contract, got it, and showed up overweight and had one of his worst seasons. Zeke has never quite understood the next level it takes to be a professional. He's a really good running back, and he helps the Cowboys win football games. And his talent is obvious. But Ezekiel Elliott's always going to be a knucklehead. He just has proven this time and time and time and time again. And is it a big deal to be smoking weed while playing video games? No, of course not. But if he's so worried about his reputation, then there's a million other incidents that he could have protected his reputation, and he didn't do so. So it's funny when he lashes out now. I'm going to sue for defamation. You're going to hear from my lawyers. Man, admitting that you're faded, admitting that you smoked weed while on Twitch is the least of any of the incidents that you have proven that you've acted the fool or you should be worried about defamation. I mean, it's always Zeke lashing out at somebody else. How could you report this? Why would you say that? How did this get out? Why are you filming me? Zeke, come on. At some point, you got to stop blaming the messenger here. And of all of the players this offseason, if I would have given you a pool of 1,000 players, okay, who admits they're high while playing video games mistakenly because their phone is still on and then gets mad about it? Zeke would probably be in your top three picks. That says all you need to know. Don't worry. He's only got $50 million guaranteed coming to him for the Cowboys. It's not like they're on the hook for anything. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. Also, you got to love Zeke being like, I wasn't smoking weed. I was just drinking. When it wasn't that long ago that he was actually in a Seattle dispensary. Remember this? Yeah, he was actually shopping, which is legal in Washington and fun. Oh, how could you report this? I wasn't there. What are you talking about? It's always something. Whereas if I gave you a pick out of 1,000 football players of this incident happening, where was Zeke on your Your draft list, your fantasy draft list for this happening.
I forget top three. He's number one. There is a fun game I play with my friends. It's called Every Offseason It Hits. Guess the Zeke Elliott story we get before training camp. We've already gotten about four. Usually it's one really good one. So, of course, Zeke's at the top of the list. It's just ridiculous. And I'll flip this another side. And I know one of these stories did involve Dak Prescott. But if you're Dak Prescott, at some point you got to be looking at the fact that Zeke got paid and continues to have bad clouds of stories follow him every offseason and go, how much more do I need to do or prove as a leader to get paid by Jerry Jones? Because this is almost insulting at this point.
That Jerry decided to pay Zeke last first, year, yes. But that Dak can't actually get his
yes.
money.
Zeke held out. Dak didn't. Dak did the right thing. And Dak still has not gotten his money. And there Zeke got his money. And his lawyer, honestly, is getting more work than a Cowboys fullback at this point.
Also, it can't feel good to be the Cowboys to have forked over that cash to Zeke, and still he's acting like a child. I mean, last year, he definitely reports out of shape after the holdout. He never gets on track. This offseason, as you said, there's been three or four incidents of him being in trouble or having a bad mark attached to him, and this is... These are all things that happened after you gave him $90 million.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not as if he got the money and was like, okay, I get it now. I can't lose this money. The guy literally has this lawyer on retainer. Does he need any more work? He's already dealing with the lawsuit with the dogs. Does he need now the Twitch defamation threat and lawsuit? Yeah, if you're the Cowboys, you're forking over this money, and it's just a guy doesn't get it. Maybe Zeke doesn't need to get it. Maybe as a running back, he could be basically a giant child, do all this stuff, as long as he's not legally getting arrested or anything like that. Maybe you're the Cowboys and you just learn to live with it and learn to live with that Zeke. But, you know, if I'm another member of the Cowboys, specifically a quarterback who is trying to do the right thing and trying to get paid by this organization, I feel personally insulted that we have a man-child running around doing so many stupid things monthly almost when he's away from the facility, and he held out and he got paid, and here I am doing everything and I can't get paid. That would be insulting to me.
Well, and when you say that maybe he's a running back, so maybe it doesn't matter, it's true, it's not a leadership position.
Right.
But also, you do want to extend your career as much as possible at a position where you're totally expendable. And so for Zeke, guess what? At running back, you need to make sure your body's in tip-top condition. You
right.
don't let it go. You don't give teams reasons to cut you prematurely or not sign you on the back end. It's kind of like at running back, because you can cycle through them so quickly, you should be on your best behavior.
Yeah.
I think about Curtis Martin. Curtis Martin was always the absolute best professional in the locker room. Everybody looked at Curtis Martin as a total leader. And part of the reason he lasted so long was because teams could trust he was going to be in the best shape and that he was always going to be an asset, even if he wasn't as productive as he used to be. LaDainian Tomlinson was the same way. Tomlinson wasn't as productive as he was early in his career with the Chargers, with the Jets, but he was an asset to have around. People wanted him around. Teams wanted him around. With Zeke, once he's no longer a 1,200-yard back, would you ever want him in your locker room ever again?
No, and the perfect current example of that is actually Frank Gore. I mean, Frank Gore is getting jobs based on
right.
his leadership and the fact that players want to look up to him in the locker room. And honestly, Frank Gore, we're having Hall of Fame discussions for, we're shocked at how high up he is the all-time rushing list. If Frank Gore had acted like a child and maybe fizzled out when his best abilities were gone maybe 6-7 years ago now, he's not accumulating these stats, and is Frank Gore going to the Hall of Fame? I don't know that. Frank Gore's going to the Hall of Fame as a compiler, basically, in my mind. So the fact that, you know, you could be a leader, I guess, and be more mature is going to provide you with more suitors past the prime of your career, and that's exactly what Zeke is doing. He's Heisman posing all of those.
I think that's true. I think it's true because when you look at Zeke versus Frank Gore, Zeke has the better talent, more upside, has the potential for a better career. Frank Gore was a grinder. Frank Gore was a lunch pail guy. Frank Gore never had top-end Walter Payton, Emmitt Smith-type talent, and yet is right there with those guys' all-time rushing yards. Zeke has more natural talent, and Zeke has been very productive, but Zeke's career won't ever be anywhere near the longevity of Frank Gore because he just doesn't care as much. His head's just not nearly screwed on straight like a Frank Gore, like an LDT, LaDainian, like a Curtis Martin.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Ohio petitions are the new Florida man because this state cannot get rid of its Christopher Columbus memorabilia fast enough. Again, not to make light of a serious debate, but last week we got two stuns off the push to rename Columbus Flavortown.
Yeah.
DA, you missed the second one because the person who organized that petition has had, for unspecified reasons, to back away from the movement, partly because he can't physically go to Ohio at the moment to deliver the petition to City Hall. So we had that on Friday. Today, we have a smaller movement to replace a Columbus statue in Cleveland's Little Italy neighborhood with a statue of Chef Boyardee, the real man, Ettore Boyardee. He came to Cleveland back in 1917, began cooking in a hotel. 7 years later, he and his wife opened their first restaurant. Then 4 years after that, they expanded to factory production. And now you can get spaghetti and meatballs in a can from Chef Boyardee. And a statue of him is being suggested in lieu of a Columbus statue in glorious Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, I have to admit my ignorance here. I didn't realize Chef Boyardee was a real person. Apparently, Chef Boyardee, as you said, Ettore Boyardee was actually an Italian immigrant that came here near the turn of the century. He was born in Italy. He started cooking in a hotel. His pasta, his spaghetti and meatballs, became renowned around the Midwest. And Chef Boyardee began making American rations for World War II. And back in the 20s and 30s, he started doing Chef Boyardee stuff where it would be prepackaged, uncooked pasta, a jar of his sauce, and a little canister of Parmesan cheese. And so people around the Midwest would buy these prepackaged pasta dinners, and Chef Boyardee was born. And his name isn't B-O-Y-A-R-D-E-E. He changed it because Americans might not have been able to pronounce his normal Boyardee, which is spelled B-O-I-A-R-D-I. So Chef Boyardee is really like Chef Boyardee, and he's a real guy. And frankly, this doesn't seem so crazy. I mean, yes, we think of Chef Boyardee as this kind of like comical little caricature of an Italian pasta chef, but he was a real guy. An immigrant to the United States that built a $1 million company. He was a real chef. He did it in Cleveland. Guys, I kind of think this is a win. A Chef Boyardee statue.
I agree, and I think it would help the legacy of him a bit to, for those now being born into only expecting to crack open a can and put it in a pot with little mini meatballs and little spaghetti-o kind of things for Chef Boyardee, that people will realize this guy was a walking, living legend. Chef Boyardee is actually an American hero. He is everything we should aspire to be when you come to this country.
Mraz,
love Chef Boyardee.
Did you think that he was a real guy, or did you think he was kind of like a caricature cartoon?
I knew he was a real guy, which just shows you my American history. I don't know a lot of stuff, but I absolutely knew that. Yeah,
God
Chef
bless.
A real guy.
I had no idea.
I believe I've used Chef Boyardee in this argument, DA, in past shows where everybody has made fun of the jarred sauce game, and although my wife makes her own sauce, my big supporting part of jarred sauce was all of these sauces are like the best sauces that these chefs made that now ended up being packaged and commercialized, and Chef Boyardee was the forefront of that, and that's why I don't think they're trash, because they were so good they got packaged.
Well, I oftentimes refer to myself as Chef Boyardee, so I'm very pro.
Of course you do.
I'm very pro this statue. I got to ask, do you like Chef Boyardee, Mraz?
I mean, define like.
We can be honest.
I mean, I would not jump to have it for dinner, no, but I would be lying if I told you in my childhood I didn't look forward to coming home from school and cracking open a Chef Boyardee and pouring it in a pot. So okay. I liked it for where my taste buds were at that time.
Okay.
A mid-30s Mraz does not like Chef Boyardee, no.
Yeah, I kind of hate it, and I had it growing up, and I kind of hated it then, too. So my question is, just how much better was Chef Boyardee back in the 40s when he's actually making the pasta, putting it in a jar, and selling it? I mean, what we're getting now has got to be a far cry. Because that sauce that you get now can't be what made him famous.
No. I'm sure because of the commercialization and over time, a little carelessness without Chef Boyardee's fingerprint on it, it has certainly not been the same. But I would imagine a 1940s pot of sauce from Chef Boyardee with the perfect amount of garlic, your taste buds would be tingling, D.A.
Yeah.
You'd be going, give me some Chef Boyardee. Ma, this isn't Chef Boyardee. How are you not making the Chef Boyardee? You'd be loving it.
Yeah, I agree. I wish I could go back in time and have a real Chef Boyardee sauce in Cleveland at the hotel. I would really be all for that. I really like this idea. This is a great stunt to a news. That was educational stunt to a news. All right. Thank you, AB. Also, I mean, you know, anti-immigration. If you're anti-immigration, there would have been no Chef Boyardee. So we got to embrace.
So what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday. My favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, Mirage, lead us off. Who are you trashing?
Okay. I have to trash this woman yesterday in the supermarket by me. In a supermarket on a Monday afternoon with only basically 5 to 6 to 7 customers who got snippy with me and cursed at me because my cart was going in the wrong direction than the now made up arrows in the aisle. All right, all I did was I needed 5 things. The baby's taking a nap. I tried to run in and out. I don't have time to be playing IKEA and going in and out of aisles. She looks down at me because my cart's facing the wrong way. And instead of even asking me nicely, as we are during a pandemic, I'm wearing a mask on, by the way, I follow all the other rules. She goes, "You're going the wrong way, bleep, bleep." Oh. Cursed at me just like that.
A bleep, bleep.
And I would have ignored it. But the bleep, bleep use really got me. You know, it's a Monday. We're all just trying to, I had a couple things to get. We're all just trying to shop, get in and out.
Wow.
And I turned to her and I said, "Excuse me?" She goes, "Rules are made for a reason, jerk." And she called me a jerk. Whoa. She doubled down. I happened to say something not so nice back to her. I said,
Go scratch your bleep?
Yes. Go scratch your bleep. Caused another girl a little further down the aisle to start hysterically laughing. And she said, "I'm going to get a manager." I said, Go get your manager. No manager ever found me. I finished my shopping in peace and I left. So it took me until the end of June to finally get yelled at about going wrong way during these invisible wrong way aisles that the supermarket's made up. But all I want to say is, look, I wear a mask. I think it's stupid to fight against that. There's certain rules we need to follow. If it's a packed Sunday, a packed Saturday, I can understand the use of arrows. But with 5, 6, 7 people on a Monday afternoon, relax on these people feeling entitled to just yell at you about new made-up rules with directions in the aisles. And don't curse at me either. Take a lap, lady.
Trasher.
Household waste goes in this bin.
I have definitely been in violation of those aisles. Those are tough. I found myself, oh boy, I'm going the wrong way. Am I going to get in trouble? But I've not been called a bleep bleep like you were, man.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. She didn't like the go scratch answer. She wasn't ready for that, but I wasn't going to take it. I wasn't going to take it at all.
AB, who are you trashing?
DA, I think I'm stealing a trash from Pete, kind of. Is also a trash in lieu of the clerk who can't be here this morning to trash this lady. But yesterday, I was in Dunkin' Donuts. I make my offer, my order. I step to the right to wait for my coffee. A lady walks over the counter behind me and goes, "Can I have a large cold coffee?" And the person at the counter goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, we're out of cold brew." And she goes, "No, cold coffee." And she's like, "Yeah, we don't have any more cold brew. It's out, I'm sorry." And the lady, again, like the customer is like perplexed. The clerk is perplexed. And she finally goes, "Do you mean iced coffee?" And she goes, "Yeah, iced coffee." Who calls it ever cold coffee? And this, I mean, this lady is not new. She's not a baby. She's not like from outer space where this is all new to her. I'm assuming she has asked for coffee before and somehow thinks iced coffee is called cold coffee. How is that a thing? And this poor lady at Dunkin' Donuts had no idea what to do. Luckily, it sprung in her head that she meant iced coffee. They could have been there for days debating what cold coffee is. So cold coffee lady is trash. Get her out.
Trash.
That will contribute to the microplastics in the bottom of the ocean.
Cold coffee. That's good. Pete the Body, who are you trashing?
I have a whole list of things today, but I'm going to pick one off of this topic. When I went into a Dunkin' Donuts establishment the other day, and the line is out the door, of course, social distancing, everything, and there's only one person behind the register. There's nobody else. One person at a busy time behind the register. You would think with social distancing and with people trying to you know, get back into the swing of things, you would have maybe another person on duty so the guy that's ordering two boxes of donuts in front of me can get his order quickly and we can move the line along. So you know what? If you're going to practice social distancing, get the staff ready too.
Stinky debris.
Connor Green, who are you trashing?
Well, DA, today I have to trash Bobby Valentine. You know, I come in yesterday. I think he has a fairly interesting quote. I put it in soundcheck and don't think really much of it. Little do I know, Bobby Valentine is a saboteur. He wanted to just sneak on the show and wreak havoc, and he did so much damage that today Lola Bunny winds up in soundcheck, and now Sean doesn't like me anymore, and he's booing me as I'm doing my Trash Tuesday. So Bobby V is ruining my life. Get Bobby V out.
Beep,
Bobby
beep.
V, trash
sanitation
him.
Just arrived.
What a controversy. We never thought that the eminently likable and very hardworking, ambitious Connor Green would ever be at the center of controversy. But today and yesterday, he has been. So I guess I'm going to piggyback off of the grocery store stuff, because even though there was a guy that tailgated me and gave me the finger the other day, even though Mraz is trying to work on his bicep curls during commercial break, I still think I've got to trash these people going crazy in these grocery stores for having to wear a mask. There's been multiple videos this week. I just don't understand this. First of all, I think it's kind of dopey to fight against wearing a mask, because the one thing we can all agree on is we want the world to go back to normal as quickly as possible. Like, we definitely want sports back, everybody. We definitely want to be able to go to restaurants. We definitely want to be able to go shopping again and go to schools and work. And so the way that we do this is by taking some very easy precautions, which is wearing a mask that's not that hard. Do I forget it sometimes? Yeah. Do I got to go back to the house to get it? Yeah. Is it comfortable? No. But, you know, it just feels like if we all do this, we've proven this in states like New York. If you wear it, it works. So fighting against this just seems to be such a weird fight. But okay, we politicize that. If you go into a store and 99% of the customers are wearing a mask and you're not, and the people that have a sign outside the store that say you got to wear a mask to be in here approach you and say, yeah, you see, everybody else is wearing a mask, you're not, we're going to have to ask you to leave. You don't have the right to fight that. That's their establishment. That's their business. They get to make those rules. I don't know if people understand this. I know that America is the land of liberty and freedoms and individual liberties, but like, you don't get to make the rules at other people's businesses. So like, let's just say they say no shirt, we're not going to let you buy carrots today. You got to wear a shirt. You'd have to wear a shirt. And if 99% of the customers are wearing a shirt and you're not, they actually can tell you you've got to leave. You're not wearing a shirt. You ever go into a convenience store that says no shirt, no shoes, no service? That's a thing. And so now it's no mask, no service. And people are freaking out like, I don't have to wear shoes. I don't have to wear a shirt. I can be naked. I want to buy my carrots in this Whole Foods. Like, no, that's not how this works. So please trash them.
Warning, hazardous material.
Remember that the DA Show is available on YouTube as well. The best of clips every single day. Go to YouTube and search the DA Show and you'll find us there. What a run it has been for our next guest. Another victory in the first FLW Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit Super Tournament. He's a guy that has dominated professional fishing over the last calendar year. He's part of Major League Fishing, MLF. Joining us this morning on the show is Jacob Wheeler. Jacob, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure, buddy. Thanks so much and congratulations. There's a lot of publications that are ranking you as the number one angler right now in the world. How's it feel to be ranked number one?
And it feels good. You know, it's just, hey, listen, when you're in that position, sometimes you just, you got to keep working hard, because there's always someone working harder than you trying to get to the top of the sport. So it's definitely humbling. Looking at that in the last few years and thinking back 10 years ago, you know, 10 years back is sort of, for me, I'm looking at it like, man, you know, I would have never guessed I was here at this point in time in my life. So very humbling, very exciting, but to also understand, hey, listen, you can't stop working.
So tell our listeners what it's like to try to outwork the competition as a professional angler. What does a workday look like? What does the research look like? What does that entail?
So I spend about 20 hours, give or take, on the computer before I prepare for a major event, looking at aerial photos, topo maps, just researching the body of water that I'm going to. If I have some history there, then I sort of get an idea. And then I'll spend a full day rigging rods. So I'll actually sit there and I'll write down, okay, I want 35 rods. Now, this is going, you know, obviously you don't need all this, you know, to just go fishing. But for me and in my profession, I sit there and I'll have 35 rods, and I want this bait, I want this line size, and I want it to do this, and I want it to do that. And I'll have all those rigged up. So then it takes a little while there. And then you get all that sort of rigged up, that pre-sort of workout, pre-tournament stuff or pre-practice. And then you go out there and practice and actually put it out there on the water and try to dial it in, you know, before the tournament. So that's sort of how it goes. But a lot of time and effort and a lot of time that you spend at the house working on stuff, getting ready, getting all your stuff together before you get on the road.
The number one ranked angler right now, Jacob Wheeler, joins us here on the show. So if you're a sports fan, it's kind of like putting together a game plan or some type of, you know, game plan going into a big opponent. What you're doing is research, game planning, strategy before you even hit the water, which I think a lot of people might not even realize. There's a lot of strategy in all of this.
Oh, there's a ton of strategy. There's a substantial amount of strategy that goes into it all. And you just have to think about it as, I mean, weather changes things, you know, pressure from other anglers change things. So you have to understand, like, okay, when you come up with a game plan, it's always changing, you know, and it's a gut feeling thing that, you know, you sort of just get, you either have or you don't, and you're like gut feeling, like, I need to go do this or I got to go do that. And it's sort of hard to explain, but it just happens. And so that's the biggest thing in any sport. You know, I got a buddy of mine that plays out west, plays for the Clippers, Paul George, and we fished together quite a bit and grew up. And so, like, we talk about it all the time, and he's like, dude, he's like, oh, like, good job, congratulations, good job, this and that. But we just talk about bass fishing, we talk about basketball, and it's sort of cool to see, you know, his side of the deal. It obviously it's a lot bigger deal mainstream, but it's also cool to have him out there on the boat with me sometimes.
I didn't realize you and Paul George were tight. When did you guys meet?
So I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. So actually, we met when I was probably around 23. We started fishing together right there when he was playing for the Pacers. And so that was, for me, that was a deal like, hey, man, you want to go fishing? And he enjoyed it. We fished a couple tournaments together, actually won a couple little local tournaments right there in Indiana when I was up there in Indianapolis. And so from there, he's had a celebrity bass fishing tournament out there in LA on Castaic the last few years, and I always would just fly out and be his partner for that event. So that's been a lot of fun. So it's sort of like to see that, you know, it's a little bit. It just has a lot of passion. I always laugh at it because, like, dude, if I don't get to play basketball, I want to be fishing. I'm gonna be a professional fisherman. I'm like, let's go, man. We can do it.
How is he as a fisherman compared to his basketball skills? I mean, Paul George is a great basketball player, but how is he as an amateur fisherman?
You know what's crazy? So I told him this one time. I remember this. And we were fishing this tournament. I'm like, hey, Paul, what would you tell me if we were a 2-on-2 basketball game and, you know, we had a lot of money on the line? And I said, I know. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you tell me to get you the ball. So you tell me, right? I said, that's what I'm telling you right now in the tournament. I got this. And he laughed, and he's like giggling. And you know what's crazy is he caught the biggest fish of the tournament that evening. We fished He actually caught two of our biggest fish that day. So Paul's no slouch off the court on the water as well. So we enjoy some doms, like, and that's sort of like his getaway, you know. And it's mine too, because it's like, you know, definitely my favorite. I mean, I go out there and just go fun fishing all the time, but it was just sort of a funny deal, you know. He's actually pretty dang solid.
That's awesome. Jacob Wheeler joins us, pro fisherman, pro angler on Major League Fishing Tour, number one angler right now out there. And you've won six events now since the beginning of 2019. You're on a hot streak. What can you credit your run to since the start of last year?
Man, you look at things, you pinpoint things. I think just a lot of it's just maturity in life. You know how I think for me personally, it's a maturity thing. You grow up, you learn from your mistakes, and, you know, and it's the same thing in fishing. You know, you just mature as an angler, and you understand a little bit more about fisheries. You understand more about fish behavior. You understand more about the competition, and that allows you to become more consistent. And I think that's the biggest thing that, I would say. And then also, you know, I have a little girl. She's a year and a half old. My wife's awesome. I have a great support group behind me. So it's sort of in a position in life, being 29 years old right now, that I'm like, man, you know, this is, I feel very comfortable, but also know that I have to continue to work.
I love it. Okay, so you're an Indianapolis guy. So give me your power rankings of Colts, Pacers, and the Indy 500.
So I grew up when Peyton was there. You know, it's so hard. I'll always be a Colts fan, but it's also a Peyton Manning fan. You know, I was there when he came back, when he was playing with the Broncos. That was sort of an emotional time there in Indy. I grew up during the Reggie Miller era. You know what I'm saying? Reggie Miller era. I would say, man, I'd say for me personally, Indy 500 is huge. Okay, Indy 500 is huge. But for me, I would say Pacers, Colts, Indy 500 personally. Me, because that's just from what I grew up there. That was the big deals for me, and I just remember back in the day when Reggie was in his prime and watching that when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. Like, that was such a big deal for me growing up.
That's awesome. Jacob Wheeler joining us this morning on the show. Another win, Major League Fishing World Champion, number one ranked angler right now, three-time MLF champ, two-time Bassmaster Elite Champion as well. He's a really fun follow on Twitter. Check him out, @WheelerFishing. Jacob, this was awesome, man. We should do this again later on in the summer. I appreciate the time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm definitely going to get back out here. We got another event coming up next week, so back out there and try to get after it.
Sounds good, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
Have a good one.
Okay, you too. That was great. Jacob Wheeler. And as I've said this before, having the anglers on for Major League Fishing has been so fun and so refreshing. We began this back at the beginning of the pandemic when everything else shut down. All the other sports shut down in March, but Major League Fishing was continuing because they could naturally social distance out on the water. So they were still going. So we were like, you know what? It's sports. They've got cool personalities. Let's have them on. And I really like fishing as well. So it was naturally interesting to me. The more we've had them on, the more you realize these guys are a great interview. They're all interesting. They have a lot of interest outside of fishing. And they're just fun to talk to. All these guys have had such good personalities and just such a great conversation. So I've really, really enjoyed it. Very cool. Major League Fishing has hooked us up with some great guests, some great anglers over the last couple months. And Jacob Wheeler, one of those guys. That was great. Just casually like, yeah, I'm boys with Paul George. Yeah, we go fishing every so often. It was awesome. So it's a Trash Tuesday this morning on the show. And it appears that we have a celebrity trasher to bring on the show. It appears that my man Mo is on the line. I just got to hang out with Mo on Friday. Mo, my man, how you doing?
I'm good, dear. How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. It was so good to see you on Friday.
Hey, is the mothership too far away? Can I still get a beam up?
You know it. Beam up, Mo, to the mothership.
Yeah.
It's always good to hear your laugh, buddy. So it's a Trash Tuesday. Is it my understanding that you actually want to do a trash today?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, who are you going to trash?
Well, it's not really a trash. It's technically a recycle.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I had to do this to this guy. He's one of the hardest workers at the station. But sorry, Mraz, I gotta recycle you.
Okay, why are you recycling Mraz?
Because it was all because of yesterday. Yesterday I was kind of calling to the show, but well, I thought you guys were too busy, but it didn't sound like you guys had any guests on. But
I called like
7 times, no answer.
So you realized that we had some open space, no guests were booked, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to call in to save Mraz here.
Yeah, I was trying to save him because he's one of the hardest workers at that station. He produces the whole show.
Well, how hard could he really work if we had no guests on the show?
Well, all he's got to do is just, like, take you guys out to break, bring you guys back from break, and you got to make sure you got the sound check and stuff. You got to get the epic fail. You gotta get all that, and then P-Bag Marotti is trying to He's trying to diss him for not being on his A game. How does that work?
Well, now you're getting the division and the battling inside our walls. You know, when I saw you on Friday, you had to say you couldn't believe that Mraz lost the chicken challenge with those chicken wings, right?
Yeah, I can't believe it. I can't believe you lost that. But I didn't eat that many chicken wings either, so.
All right, Mraz, we'll defend yourself to little Mo here.
Well, Mo, two things. Number one, I did finally have a guest booked at 8 a.m. Second of all, you're not really helping me when you say that I put together all these things and you name 4 things I no longer do for the show. So it makes me look like a...
No. I mean, before all the pandemic happened.
Oh, thank you, Mo. All right. Good save, Mo. Good save. I appreciate that, man. And if the pandemic wasn't going on, I would have been there to answer your phone on all 7 calls yesterday. So know that I didn't do that to you.
Mo. I was just trying to throw you under the bus. I was just trying to help you because Peabody Bugatti was trying to mess things up for you.
Mo, I appreciate that. I will leave all the throwing under the bus. That's what I do to everybody else here, so don't worry about that.
Hey, Mo, are you excited about the Orioles starting to play baseball again?
Yeah, I am excited. Even though it's 60 games, I'm still excited.
Yeah, even though it's just 60 games, how many wins do you think the Orioles will have in 60 games?
45.
Oh, okay, a 45-15 Orioles season, huh?
Oh,
yeah.
I like that. Okay, and are you excited about the Ravens coming back and playing with Lamar Jackson this fall?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I know you got to meet Lamar Jackson, right?
I did get to meet him, yes.
I saw, was it in training camp last year where you actually called a play for them and then they came around and they were all like high-fiving you and had you in the huddle?
Yeah.
That was amazing. You got to call a play during the Ravens practice.
Yeah, I got to call a play and the play actually worked.
It worked, right? They went for a touchdown, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a good play caller. Maybe you should take over.
Hey, Mo, I need you to come coach the Giants because we haven't been able to call a good play in about 5 years.
Sorry, Mraz. That I can't help you with.
Hey, by the way, little Mo, you got your show coming up on Thursday. 105.7 in Baltimore is going to be doing a radio show. Jeremy Kahn's going to be hosting with you 6 to 9 p.m. from your bedroom. Are you excited?
I am really excited. I never have a radio show hosted from my bedroom before.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has. I mean, Mraz has been dying for that for years now, but they still won't give him a show in his bedroom either. So
Jeremy gets to host this show from my house. Heck, why not host the show from my room?
That's exactly right. It's awesome. Do you know who's going to be guests on your show yet, or is it all secret?
It's all secret, but I have a feeling I know a couple people who are going to call in.
Now, I kind of want to name the show something kind of fun and cool. I brought up maybe when I saw you on Friday, Faux Show with Mo. But yeah, maybe you like that, or should we call it the Mo Show, or what do you like? What should we call it?
The Big Mo Show.
The Big Mo Show?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, I like that. The Big Mo Show, Thursday night, 6 until 9 Eastern, on 105.7 in Baltimore. I'm going to tweet out the link so that people can listen to you host that show, because I think it's awesome what they're doing. And I expect you now to have a demo reel that you can send to my bosses so you can maybe try to get one of our shows here on the network.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
All right. We'll get you an agent, okay?
Okay.
Well, Mo, it's good to have you here on Trash Tuesday, buddy. Just so you know, you're always welcome. You call anytime, okay, my man?
All right. And Maraz, make sure you answer this time.
All right, Mo. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Okay.
Okay. Little Mo joining us from Baltimore on a Trash Tuesday. I think he should be a staple of Trash Tuesday, especially if he's trashing Maraz for not booking guests.
He's got the Orioles at 45-15, DA. What kind of wacky season is this going to be?
He should be the GM.
Sell the Orioles to Mo, Peter Angelos.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
On this date 4 years ago, we had another DA show violation. It's the night we realized Joey Chestnut would be banned.
I'm not eating tonight.
So no hot dogs at all, Joey?
I could look at it and critique it, but I hate to be a Debbie Downer.
Stoney? Well, you guys,
you can eat it if you want.
You guys can turn around and go home then. I mean,
we can make the other people eat it in the studio. Yeah, it's the end of the night, brother. You're not putting anything in me unless you're paying me big. And you're not that cute.
Well, I appreciate that, Joe. Back at you, my man. So, what can we talk about then? I mean,
we can make them. We got a couple people in here to eat them.
We were going to make creative hot dogs, and we were going to have you guys at least try them. But you won't even take a bite of them.
I'll take a bite of it. I'll take a bite.
Bite's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This is
This is compromise.
Now we're working towards something.
Now well, we got something.
The art of the deal here.
Eye for an eye.
Okay. James, why don't we turn Mraz's microphone on over there and see if we can get him going. So, okay. A bite here or there. That's good.
That we can make you get it.
Okay.
We can critique
it. You will eat 70 hot dogs
we're
coming up
eat
here
70,
in a couple of days.
And we're...
So one bite won't kill you.
That's like telling... I'm not going to say
go
that.
Go ahead. What
that's like saying, oh, you know, you're Jenna Jameson's. You can do all this. Why don't you just do this one for free? No, do this one. You know, we're going to do it. We're committed to a contest for competition. Doesn't mean we got to do it every second.
But that's true. But you did eat two hot dogs earlier today.
And it was in my schedule. This was a little bit of a surprise.
Okay.
You caught us.
So Mraz, who did we speak to here in terms of organizing this?
She's not here.
Okay.
Yeah, Tess.
We can blame Tess.
Tess, okay. We will blame. I'm okay. Throwing her under the bus. Right. She said
the bus is rolling on her.
Okay.
And what, yes.
And Tess, because we explained.
And that's why she brought hot dogs.
And that's. But you explained to Tess that we were going to do this kind of creative hot
dog. I have
dog.
An email chain
okay.
to back me up.
All right. And she said that these guys would do that. And
she said, yeah, they'll try hot dogs.
Okay. All right. So at least we can get a bite out of them.
Yeah, we'll get a bite.
Okay. So you guys have to take it out with Tess then.
I'm all right.
Okay. Are you the type of guy
I'm like a little bit creeped out.
You were the one that used the Jenna Jameson metaphor before.
Well,
so.
You were trying. You're like, yeah, let's just see what you can do here. What the heck?
I didn't mean to act like
I'm not a monkey dance.
One of the most awkward moments in DA show history 4 years ago today. Our toll-free line sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. I mean, I swear, we could do 4 hours on that clip.
Oh.
It is so aggravating every time we replay that.
Every single time.
There's something more that makes me angrier every time that I forget about the first time. But just that money quote he gave, that unless you're paying me big, I think is something that we've never really talked about since. Just shows he's the kind of baseball player that would walk past the kid and not give his autograph because, oh, you got to pay me for that. Like, you eat hot dogs, Joey. I mean, take a real grasp of reality. We need to pay you big. I mean, and also, she agreed. The whole thing was set up for them to eat. They brought in the dogs. It's in paperwork. Well, it's not in your schedule.
Also, suggesting that we have to pay you means that you should never then do any promotion ever for, because when you do an interview, we don't pay our guests.
Right.
That's against policy for all of these radio stations and networks. So when he went on SportsCenter and ate two hot dogs, he wasn't getting paid.
Right.
So when he brings that up, you know, it's just a slap in the face. You don't get paid every time you promote one of these events. You are booked to get people to watch, because if we don't watch, what you do doesn't matter. So to say, unless you're paying me, and also the fact that he went directly to a Jenna Jameson reference, of all the references, of all of the career choices you could choose to suggest, well, these are the things you are paid for, these are the things you are not. You are considering yourself like a porn actress? That's what you consider the parallel of your career to be?
And Matt Stoney, spineless that day. Spineless Matt Stoney.
Yeah, because they're all cowering in the shadow of the great Joey Chestnut. From that day, we said, you're banned for good. We're never going to have Joey Chestnut ever again. Nathan to Major League Hot Dog Eating, they've wanted us to have him on. We've said, no, he's banned. He's not coming on the show. He is not welcome around these parts. I'm sorry. Chestnut is done for good around here. Hockey's training camps are going to open up here in about 2 weeks, July the 10th. So we got hockey back. We're waiting on the two hub cities. So there's a lot of excitement coming into the Stanley Cup playoffs, expanded playoffs. And our next guest can talk about that, but he can also talk about a cause that is so important, which is researching and finding a cure for ALS, otherwise known as Lou Gehrig syndrome. Friend of mine, who has been a high riser in the NHL for years now, is the assistant GM in Calgary with the Flames, and he was diagnosed with ALS, and he is looking to raise awareness and research and find a cure. It's part of the Snowy Trick Shot Challenge. And if you were following me on Twitter, you would have seen last week a trick shot that I did with a buddy of mine as well, where we swung a golf club and hit a trick shot about 50 yards down my lawn, off the deck, and into a bucket, and challenged other guys to also do the trick shot challenge and to raise awareness and money for ALS research. Joining us here on the show is Chris Snow. Chris Snowy, good morning. How we doing?
Damon, good morning. Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for the terrific intro and for your trick shot. It was great to see the sheer enthusiasm. I don't know if I call it shock, but enthusiasm that you and Chris Wojcik had with that.
Well, there was some shock as well because we had been trying and working on that for hours and we finally got it. So it was, yes, this actually worked.
People that the outtakes of this would be as enjoyable as the shock itself. And that's what we should be going after, that everyone's mishits and the things they had to say. The muttering would be just terrific theater.
It's been pretty cool around the NHL to see so many people do this and support you and support the cause. What's it been like to watch so many people that you know around the NHL and others contribute to the cause?
Well, it's been really, really heartwarming. The word I've mentioned is that it felt worthwhile to go through all of this over the last year, knowing that we have a chance to legitimately make a difference in the way of awareness, in the way of bringing some comfort to people who are sick, some hope to people who are sick, who don't have a clinical trial that is promising, which I do. And that's very, very rare at this point in time. And over the last 2 weeks to 3 weeks since we started this challenge, we've managed to raise in excess of $40,000 since we began our fundraising back in December, when I announced that I had been diagnosed months before that with ALS. We've raised close to $185,000, every single dollar of which will go to research.
Amazing. Nearly $200,000 raised for ALS research right now. The Snowy Trick Shot Challenge, you can find that on Twitter, all over the place, on social media. So you've been open about this challenge that you faced with a wife and two children, and this unfortunately ran in your family, has run in your family. There is no known cure for ALS. So knowing that was your family history, what was it like over the last couple of years wondering if it would ever end up showing up in your bloodline?
There was always a concern. The concern became a real one for all of us when my first uncle to die of this died in 2004. It was rather, I suppose, dormant would be the word, until 2013 when we lost a second uncle of mine. And I think the concern became especially real in 2016 when we lost my cousin, and he was only 28 years old. And before that, I had at least a feeling that this was something that people in their late 40s to 50s or so in our family had concern about. And when we lost him, it felt very, very real and very possible. And so anytime, you know, my family or for myself, you develop a soreness, a cramp, you worry. If your legs feel, if you have that restless leg, you wonder, is this ALS? And then in 2018, we lost my dad. And at that point, you think this has to at some point stop, because the odds of each of them getting this gene were 50-50, and yet the coin kept flipping the wrong way. And then last year, in the spring and into May and June, I was feeling progressive weakness in my right hand. And it tends to be a process of elimination diagnosis. And it always has been. You go back to Lou Gehrig, which is 81 years ago that he was diagnosed. And it still took him 6 days of full-day testing at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota to be diagnosed. And it took me six separate visits to be diagnosed. And when I was, I thought, I said, this is a death sentence. And it's a no-hope disease, and it always has been. And I was very, very fortunate that because our family's genetic cause was the first discovered genetic cause, there's a very promising trial that I've been in for about a year now, and the expectation was that I only had 1 year when I was diagnosed.
Chris Snow joins us here, assistant GM of the Calgary Flames. The Snowy Trick Shot Challenge has taken Twitter by storm. You've probably seen that is to raise awareness and research for ALS research and a cure. And so give us your health update 1 year later.
Sure. So when I was diagnosed, I had lost most of the use of my right hand and had noticeable muscle loss in my right forearm. And I went into that trial about a month or so after I was diagnosed. And for almost the balance of the full year, I had no change at all. And that allowed me to coach my son's hockey team this past year to do really anything I wanted, short of tying my shoes and cutting food. I've been really surprised that there are very few activities that demand you to use two hands. I've learned to play baseball left-handed, throw a football left-handed, and so I've continued on very normal. The only change I've noticed in the last couple of months is a change in what the doctors think is a facial nerve or two that would affect making a full smile, affect squinting, things like that. And again, that's something that if I walked into a room, people wouldn't notice unless I gave them, you know, some opportunity to notice by attempting to make a really big smile, and then they probably have to be attentive. So that I can deal with. That compared to what was supposed to be the hand I was dealt demonstrates to me and the doctors that this trial drug is working. And the hope is that, you know, if I have any changes, they're as small and as slow to come as the ones that I've had.
What's the culture around ALS, doctors, medical community, patients, families? Is it one of dread and of depression, or is it one of hope that with science and technology, and as you said, these trial runs on things, that there can be some optimism?
That's a great question. And I'm sure that there is dread for everyone. But the people who are public about it, the people who are out there lobbying for more trials and greater access to trials, the people who are fundraising, the people like Steve Gleason, the people like Brian Wallach, who is an incredible follow on Twitter and has made an exceptional effort toward expanding really the access to trials and research-driven solutions. These people are so altruistic and somehow can step outside of the suffering they're going through on a daily basis to see hope and create hope. We've been amazed. And the doctors are not competitive. This is not about being the first to solve this or to begin to solve this. They are about sharing their findings. They were so, here in Calgary, the first time that I was able to get my treatment, which is developed by a Boston-based company, but available at select sites in North America. The first time I got my treatment here, some of them were on vacation on those days, but came in because they viewed it as such a seminal moment in the potential treatment of this. So I see excitement, and I see just a team orientation across this group of doctors and patients. And it's inspiring. I appreciate that people have found me inspiring, but I have found all of them equally inspiring.
I know a lot of our listeners are very familiar with Steve Gleason, former New Orleans Saints, an icon within that organization, and his very public battle with ALS. Steve Gleason's a pretty amazing human being. What's your takeaway when you see Steve Gleason and his wife's very public battle with this?
One of the more amazing things that happened to me in recent times is being connected to Steve Gleason. I was sitting on my porch last night texting with him. And Steve Gleason, as you and it sounds like many of your listeners know, has no use of any of his body. He's on a ventilator full-time, in a wheelchair, or lying down full-time. And Steve Gleason became good friends with Theo Epstein, and Theo Epstein connected me to Steve recently. And Steve has a messaging app and can message, I think, fairly quickly using his eyes, and his eyes will create that text. And he has a text-to-voice app as well. And what he did a long time ago before losing his voice was to bank his voice. And so he's able to type with his eyes and have that speak out loud in his voice that he has since lost. And when I talk to him, he has he just has enthusiasm. And he can't express himself, obviously, like he used to. But when I talk to him, and I kind of use the word talk and, you know, in quotation marks, I can feel that spirit is still there. And that kind of spirit at this point, 9 years into the disease for him, is remarkable. And that just pushes me to make the most of every moment and to continue raising money to cure this thing.
For those that want to contribute and to lend their help, whether it's via your wallet or whatever other energies you can provide, Calgary Flames website is a good place to go, and the hashtag Trickshot for Snowy, Snowy Trickshot, Trickshot Challenge, all of those you'll find videos online. Also, I did one, if you're on my Twitter feed last week, that you can find links to as well. And you can go to the hashtag Trickshot for Snowy, use the number 4, and find information on the Calgary Flames website as well and on social media. Right now, the Flames also have the eighth most points in the Western Conference. We're on the verge of restarting training camp. Are you excited for hockey to return this summer?
I am. My son, who has an August birthday, is just pumped, thinking we might play on his birthday. I think that we're all starving for, you know, competitive team sports in any form. In this case, you know, televised without fans. And I think it's an opportunity, you know, to win the cup. Simple as that. You only get so many as a person who works for a team or as a player. And most times, I think when players go into the playoffs, they're in some form tired, injured, and it's just a real game of survivor. And the game might be more physical, might not be as clean right away, meaning perfect plays and tape-to-tape passing over and over, but I think that the effort level could be as higher because the guys will be fresh.
Would totally encourage all of our listeners to go to the Calgary Flames website and click on Foundation. You'll see a lot of information and videos about the battle for an ALS cure, or a battle for help and a battle for awareness and research, and donating there would be an awesome cause. Chris Snow, assistant GM of the Calgary Flames, joining us this morning on the show. Well, Snow, it's always great to finally catch up, and I'm so glad that you're doing all right. And our thoughts here on the show and my family's goes out to you and your family, and I appreciate your strength and your knowledge and your temperament throughout all of this. It's quite the inspiration. So I appreciate the time today, my man.
Well, thank you, Damon. It's always nice to, through all this, catch up with people from my past. And when I go back to Syracuse, it brings lots of good memories. So it's nice to do it.
You got it, buddy. Thanks so much, Snowy.
You have a great day.
You too. Chris Snow joining us from the Calgary Flames, assistant GM, and has been diagnosed with ALS a year ago and is trying to forward the cause and change and research and donations. So I appreciate you allowing me to have some time on this platform to do exactly that. He's a great guy. His family is an amazing group of people, and that organization has been supporting him through and through. So would it be a bad thing to see the Calgary Flames do well in this year's NHL Stanley Cup playoff return?
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
3 years ago this week, Tyson bit Holyfield's ear, and so we asked you guys today on Twitter and on Facebook, what will Tyson be more remembered for, biting the ear or the Hangover movies? 77% on Twitter said it was the bite. 74% on Facebook said it was the bite night. After the bite, Mike Tyson had to forfeit $3 million from his $30 million purse for that fight and received an 18-month ban. Forbes once estimated Tyson's career earnings to be as high as nearly $700 million, although who knows how much he actually got from that, since it seems like everybody around him stole from him for years. That is your advanced analytics this morning. It's a Trash Tuesday, so let's take out the trash this morning here on the show. Alien OG tweets, DA, I'm writing this from a hole in Twitter prison. I'm trashing Twitter for putting me on a 6-day punishment. No yard time, no conversary, and no communicating with the Twitterverse. My voice has been silenced, but my will is strong. Until my return, recycle that little blue bird. Hashtag get him out.
Ooh, that garbage bag is leaking.
Trashings here on the show on Twitter. Adam tweets, I'm trashing people who go to the gym and talk the whole time on their phone while they're on the cardio machine. There's literally only 3 machines that I can use due to COVID, and you're taking one up so you can get a pat on the back from whoever. Get off the machine. Trash them.
Illegal dumping.
Get them out.
Daryl tweets, I'm trashing my son's friend that came over to ask if he could set off fireworks in my driveway. Not with my son, though, just him and his brother. Fire them off on your own driveway. Hashtag Trash Tuesday.
Oh, break out the hazmat suit.
Ray tweets, I'm trashing the DPW of my town where I work for taking away one of our garbage trucks and giving the rest of us almost twice as much work a day. Hashtag trash them.
Splash Brothers. More like the Trash Brothers.
Kaz and Wisco tweets, I'm trashing my coworker. Yesterday, I caught my coworker wearing their mask as a chin guard, then proceeded to sneeze without it covering their mouth. We're required to wear the mask at work for this reason. Get him out.
Are those maggots?
Pat tweets, I'm trashing drivers stopped at a stop sign. Wait for me to get there before they turn in front of me. I might be 50 feet away. Now I have to wait for them, jerk. They also wait until pedestrians in the next time zone before proceeding through a crosswalk. Trash them.
That's a dumpster dive.
Now I want to get to the fail here because I got one last trash to get to after that. It's a doozy. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning. Little Mo called in and called out Mraz's booking.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
So it's a Trash Tuesday. Is it my understanding that you actually want to do a trash today?
Well, it's not really a trash. It's technically a recycle.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I had to do this to this guy. He's one of the hardest workers at the station. But sorry, Mraz, I gotta recycle you.
Nope, that did not happen. So let's go back and take a look at that.
Okay, why are you recycling Mraz?
Because it was all because of yesterday. Yesterday I was kind of calling to the show, but I thought you guys were too busy, but It doesn't sound like you guys had any guests on, but...
dance around the question.
I've called 7 times. No answer.
So you realized that we had some open space, no guests were booked, and you were like, you know what, I'm going to call in to save Mraz here.
Yeah, I was trying to save him because he's one of the hardest workers at that station. He produces the whole show.
Well, how hard could he really work if we had no guests on the show?
Yeah, Cat is Clippic?
Well, all he's got to do is just, like, take you guys out to break, bring you guys back from break, and you got to make sure you got the sound check and stuff. You got to get the Epic Fail. You gotta get all that. And then too bad Marotti is kind of...
I've had enough of you, all right? So unless you want to come in, don't bother me or Connor.
He's trying to ditch him for not being on his A game. How does that work?
All right, let's see Thursday and Friday.
Well, Mo, two things. Number one, I did finally have a guest booked at 8 a.m. Second of all, you're not really helping me when you say that I put together all these things and you name 4 things I no longer do for the show. So it makes me look like a...
No. I mean, before all the pandemic happened.
Oh, thank you, Mo. All right, good save, Mo.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Amazing to have Mo weigh in on a Trash Tuesday. So let me wrap up with this trash from DJ Tommy D. DA, I'm sorry, I have to trash Bob the Deli Man for not returning my reusable shopping bag. Now, this is Mraz's dad. I brought him a Junior's cheesecake and a few other goodies for him and the family to enjoy, and he never gave me my reusable shopping bag back. I've asked for it several times. I mean, I understand he's driving around in his Mustang convertible with the top down cranking Huey Lewis in the news. But I have to juggle my groceries all the way home now. Always return Tupperware and reusable shopping bags, even if we say we don't. Trash them!
This must be garbage time.
Get them out.
Mraz, your dad has not return DJ Tommy D's reusable shopping bag?
Right. And DJ Tommy D started listening to the show because my dad plays the show there. But yes, he gave us, for some reason, a Junior's cheesecake, which was delicious, for Father's Day. He wanted me and my father to enjoy a Junior's cheesecake. He bought it at the store, and my dad, I guess, brought home the bag and took that as a bag he could keep forever. I wasn't aware of this controversy. And as far as the Mustang convertible, my dad got into a car accident 2 weeks ago and is delaying, or wants it delayed when he gets his car back because the rent-a-car they gave him is a Mustang convertible. And he's driving down the Belt Parkway to work every day in this Mustang convertible, and I think he thinks he owns the car now when he's just paying the insurance rent fee every day. Go take as much time as you need with my Sonata. I'm driving this, so DJ Tommy D's well aware that is not his Mustang convertible.
That's a real Uncle Leo move right there.
Totally. The hair blowing like he owns the car. Such a joke.
By the way, we never got an update on whether your mom is talking to you after you admitted that she farted at the wedding and blamed it on you.
I've seen her since, but she has not mentioned it. So I don't know if it's just an unnamed thing. She doesn't want more attention brought to the situation, so she's dodging more press questions.
We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to the 4th. We're on to the 4th of July. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Pete the Body Bilotti on the wheels of steel. Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Andrew Kaplan of the Wizard of Watch DA. And Connor Green as your associate producer. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.